Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Seer of Lost Sands by J.T. Williams. Narrated by Daniel Thomas May. 1. 5 years. It had been 5 years of searching unceasingly. 5 years since he was awakened on the icy shore with only his narwhal friend beside him. From the far northern glacial seas, he went from shore to shore, searching for a sign, a whisper, a chance that she was alive. Ulri, his sister, once sickened by the whites of Vanku, and placed into the heart of the winds, was somewhere within the world. He feared her dead, but he would not give up. He had chased rumors, sought out clues, and killed more than a few deserving souls in an attempt to find her. At last he had caught whispers of a mysterious old man who could find those of bloodkin rumored to live in the far south, a sandy region where the deserts to the west met up with great mountains. That was his next destination. His journey had taken him around the northern horn of the far edge of Taria, and entering the straits of the Western Passage, he directed Tulisairo along the dock of a fishing village. Keelan stood, stretching and looking at the dark rock beach and grey clouds rolling high above. Tulisairo squeaked.
"I know, friend, but I dare not force you to warmer waters. You are accustomed to the north, and I go to waters I fear too warm for your blood."
He gathered his belongings and tightened the scabbards of his blades. He touched the hilt of his brother's sword. His mind flashed to the gates of the Temple of Winds. His one brother was dead, his other bleeding and under the foot of the Itsu priest. The memory, though in his mind many times, was still painful. He wrapped himself in his coverings and jumped from the boat. The pebble beach crunched under his feet. It felt weird to not be on the ocean's tossing surface. He had spent many weeks in journey to this place. The moment he had learned of the man in the south, he headed toward the passage, but the warming waters had forced Tulisairo to slow her pace.
"You should take it up with your kin, Meridas, and perhaps the sea god will make it so you may follow. You know I will not stay from the sea if I can help it, but I cannot wait. I sense Ulri still, but it is fading. When I have her, I will come back to these waters, if we have not reunited by then."
Tulisairo squelched and dove underwater, taking the boat underneath. Keelan watched until the waters calmed, the soft surf caressing underneath his feet. His new journey began. He trudged up the shore. Drying racks for fish dotted the upper hills, sparsely covered with moss and green grasses. Smoke rose in the distance. The village would hopefully have way of passage further south. It was a journey still to the desert, but his map showed no lack of villages and an even larger city at the mouth of the Western Passage. His first step was to reach that place. He came to a low-built stone fence that ran the length around a small village of stone huts. Some people were about, but it was still early in the day. Passing through a gateway, he scared a trio of chickens that ran off further down the path. A woman carrying firewood back into her house turned and saw him. She jumped in surprise, but then approached him.
"Stranger, we do not see many strangers, particularly of elven kind. I advise you to continue down the road if business is what you seek. This is just a camp."
"A camp made of stone?"
"Aye. Since the storm last year wiped out most who lived here for some time, it has been slow to have people return to it. But the fishing is good, and the halibut doesn't seem to come much further south."
Keelan smiled.
"That I know. I have a friend who quite enjoys the fish."
"Would you like a cup of tea?"
she asked.
"I really must keep on, but I have been away from comfortable places for a while."
The woman led him into the house. It was a quaint abode with a bed and table. A cooking stove was against the far wall, and the shelves were stocked with jars of preserved vegetables and fish.
Do you frequently let strangers in without even knowing their name? She laughed.
Sometimes, but the normal fare of strangers is not those who can speak back. White bears rummage through the camp on occasion, but not much else. We do not have robbers up this way. There is nothing of value anyway except fish. My name is Ma.
Keelan, he said to her with a smile.
She set down a cup and poured a dark brewed tea. On the shelf was a jar of honey which she offered him, and he stirred in just a spoonful.
So you are an elf in the north? Call it common wisdom, but do you not prefer trees and warmer weather?
It is true. My kind are not those of the south. But there are places with such comforts that can still be had further north.
Well, I haven't seen many trees up this way.
The conversation became awkwardly quiet for a moment. Keelan was the first to speak again.
Do you live up here with someone, or are you alone?
Alone. My father lives in the south, but is ill, and the medicine he needs is not easily obtained. Furthermore, fairies help, but are rarer in these parts, so we are forced to work extra to keep a supply of fresh ones. I have a brother who serves in the southern waters as part of the Highland navies. Crime is rare here, but becomes more common the warmer the water. The Gulf region has so many foul places within its shores, we try to stay where we are safe. There is much evil in the lands.
I make my way south, to the desert. I hope to avoid foul places, but I can deal with what I must.
She glanced down at his swords and then looked to his hands.
You have scars from battle and weapons of fine craft?
They are, and yes.
Watch yourself going south. Mercenaries are common, as are those seeking wealth in any form. The kingdoms are literally at each other with blades for simple misunderstandings.
She stood and went to the shelf. She picked up a parchment and brought it to the table.
You have a map, no?
I do.
Let me see it.
He pulled out the map and unrolled it on the table. She unrolled her parchment, which was a map as his, but more detailed and older.
I mark a path that will lead you safely south.
As she scribbled a southern road along the coast that passed through a few of the villages already marked, he looked up at her. She was young and fair. Though he had no doubt in her skill as a fisher, he wondered why she would not find work somewhere else. He sensed something of her that she sought to hide. Something did not make sense. She looked up at him.
You do sense it, don't you?
He nodded.
It seems my dreams are still of need in the world. I had thought my power quieted for good.
She sighed.
I am of a dying kind. If you can sense it, you must know how much I must hide. The Dwemhar are rare, and even rarer will we admit who we are. My dreams told me of a stranger coming this way at morning light, and I have not had a dream as such in some time. I do not know your business, but I fear there is a greater darkness upon the lands that is beyond you or me. Perhaps you are to deal with such?
Keelan shook his head.
I seek a man to help me find one of my own blood, my sister.
Then I tell you, watch your path, for I fear there is much changing in the world.
He rolled the map back up and stood. She took his hand in hers.
I can sense your sadness, elf. I also sense you are more than you seem.
Such words are true, but do not worry of it. Care for your father and remain in hiding. There are men who would kill you.
Ma closed her hands around his.
With your hands, you will do what you seek. The gods of the north will watch over you. I will remain safe here for a time.
She led him back outside. The sun was rising higher and warmed the air, burning what fog remained.
Fair luck on your journey. I must get to the water and the fish that hide from me.
He smiled and nodded to her with a slight wonder if he would see her again. He knew he was one of the last of Dwemha blood, and with the chance meeting of another like him, he hoped it was a sign he was on the right course. Turning to continue down the path, he looked up as the still thick clouds obscured the sun again. He looked down at the map and the road still ahead. He tucked it away and began walking. The road remained barren of other travellers for some time. In the next village he found a man heading south with a bunch of crops. For a few coins he managed to secure a ride through the next two villages. He was fortunate to have obtained money enough for many men over the last few years, so coinage was not a problem. His ways of earning the money was not always honourable, but he had reason enough to do whatever was needed. In the next village he departed from the cart and took back to the road. There were many more people bustling around stacked pallets and buckets of fish. He checked his map to assure he stayed on the path as marked. A stable on the edge of the camp, as he understood they called it, regardless of how many buildings they had, had a man outside who looked him up and down as he walked past.
"I see not bag or cart, so a travelling man such as yourself might want a horse."
Keelan stopped. There was a white mare standing near the corner, looking his way.
"Fair offer," Keelan said. "How much for the white one?"
"Oh dear, sir, I'm afraid she is too scared and wild. Some of the horses were run up this way after a fight further south, with a manner of pirates and our regional navies. No man has been able to calm that white one, so I keep him well but have not had time to deal with the behaviours."
Keelan walked to the edge of the fence, reaching his hand out to the mare.
"Friend, I know not your past and you know not mine, but perhaps we may work together."
The horse neighed and walked toward him. It lowered its head, and Keelan stroked its hair.
"The horse is good. How's much for the horse?"
His speech abruptly changed, having used the power within his mind.
"I cannot believe it has approached you with not even a jump or force of hand. Though mind your drink, the way you're talking you might fall off that horse."
Keelan turned and looked at him. It was then the man noticed his blades.
"I mean no disrespect, dear elf. Blades like that are rare. I had thought you a normal man of the bottle. Your words seem strange. If not the poisoned bottle, are you in need of a healer?"
"There is no need for worry. And I am not ill. I only ask for a fair price."
200 would be a more than fair offer. The others go for 300.
Keelan counted out the coinage and the man nodded to him.
"I thank you and wish you well on your travels."
He led the horse out and mounted him without any issue. The horsekeeper offered him a saddle, which he took to ease the ride. He had ridden horses before, but it had been some time since then. The swordsmen of the Urlas Woodlands rarely rode upon any steed, so there was no need for it before now. Keelan rubbed the horse's head and gave a tug of the reins, and they began to trot down the road. The sun was setting, but he at least wanted to make it a bit further down the road before resting. The next spot on the map was supposedly a larger town and would likely have a place with a proper bed and meal. The moon was high in the sky as he came to the crest of the hill and to the promised town. There was a brown sign with the word Maklak. He rode into the open gates that were one of the first to actually have standing guards. They looked him up and down as he entered, but did not hassle him. He dismounted and began to walk his steed. There was an inn ahead. A sign hung outside of it, swinging in the brisk wind. The image on the wooden plaque was a coin purse and a half moon with the words, "Sleepy Rags Inn." A strange name, but it would work for him. He tied his horse out front and flipped a coin to the guard watching over them. He was a large man, not of the garb of the city guards, so likely a hired hand.
"I trust my horse will be well."
The man smiled.
As long as you do not drink too much and cause a ruckus, then yes.
Keelan went to the door and pushed it open. The smell of herbs took him back to a springtime walk in the Urlas woodlands. He looked around the room with a careful glance. Many simply didn't notice he was there. Either they were too busy with their own dealings or otherwise preoccupied. He noticed one of the patrons at the far corner of the room that was muttering to himself. Keelan walked to the bar.
I need a room.
The barkeep turned and looked him up and down.
You look a bit elven. What are you doing in these parts? Hadn't you heard some in the world want your kind dead?
Keelan shook his head.
I haven't heard that, and I don't really care. I have coin, if you will give me a room.
Well then, a room is all you need?
Yes, a bit of food would be nice, but it is not necessary. I wouldn't want you to be inconvenienced by my presence.
He moved his hand down to his hilt. The man nodded.
I'm not at all. Very well, 30 pieces for the room and board. You should know we of these regions don't care for trouble.
Keelan smiled and went to reach into his pack when a stranger brushed up beside him.
I'll pay for him.
The man dropped the coins on the bar. Keelan looked at him. He had dark hair and a long face.
The man didn't seem too young or old in the age of men, but his clean-shaven face was strange in an inn of many with beards.
That being as it was, Keelan had no facial hair, but it was clear this man was no elf. The barkeep slid Keelan a key and set a plate of bread before him.
Upstairs, room 3, and roasted fish stew is coming,
he said. Keelan gave a deep nod to the man who had paid for him.
Thank you.
A friendly gesture to hopefully earn a conversation of interest to a man like you.
They both sat down at the bar, and the man smiled and nodded as he took a sip from his drink. The barkeep brought the stew and then hurried over to 2 patrons who had begun to argue.
As I said, I have a proposition.
The man from before continued. Keelan began to dip the bread into the bowl of fish stew.
I have my own issues, and I mustn't be from them.
Do you head south?
I do. To the sea and boat to ferry me further.
Well, then.
The man laughed.
We may be able to help each other. My brother and I have a boat that could take you further south.
Many have boats, I am sure.
Aye, but we won't charge you nearly as much as those swindling sea rats.
Man, of whom I do not know your name, you do know that I neither care nor need to know your plight. Your word is worth as much as these supposed sea rats. I have spent the greater time of 5 years dealing with men of all kinds. I see not how you can provide proof of such a claim of excellence in a sea of a sad existence of men in which I have found these many months.
The man shook his head in a quaint, understanding way.
I may have misjudged you. I thought you were an elf mercenary, a great warrior, perhaps.
My ability to fight has not come up. Speak clearly of your intentions, or you will find my mood further soured than it is now. I do not even know your name.
Apologies, dear elf. The name is Orolo.
Well, there is one thing.
And well, we just need to talk with my brother. He is not too far away, staying at the Marine Swamp to the west. We have an agreement with the master of the region to wait out his time until I can find someone to travel south with.
Wait out his time?
We have accommodations there, an agreement long held. We only need to show up and explain we are done with such agreements, and we can head south to whatever thing you need to do.
And my ability to fight is just a bonus point you make to me.
Robbers, dear elf, the path is fraught with dangers. I am but a man of simple blade. Your blades are of high quality, fine steel, if I might guess. You take me to the swamp and speak with my brother. We will help you south in return.
Keelan stared at the man. He was weary. He thought of his mind powers, but he had difficulty using them since the time at Dim's palace and the events that transpired there. He had been lucky earlier with the horse. The man appeared to be innocent enough in his asking, but Keelan questioned the task itself.
I will see you to your brother, but I will not help beyond that. If I sense foul play in your or your brother's words or actions, I will think little of killing you both.
Fair, then.
The barkeep brought Keelan a glass of water.
Orlo, if you are indeed done pestering this elf for protection, I will have my room key back. It seems you've spent the lot of your money buying help.
Right away, good Rum. I have it here.
Orlo passed the key to Rum, who took it and shook his head as he tucked it into his shirt pocket. Orlo then looked back to Keelan.
Do you think I could borrow the floor of your room for the night?
Keelan looked away and finished his soup. After dunking the bread into the juices, he looked back to the man who had bought his services of supposed protection, just to now beg him for a place to sleep.
I suppose, dear man.
Keelan stood from the bar and followed a stairwell near a crackling fire where a man with a lute played a somber tune to the sound of patrons tapping on the tables.
They sing of the folly of the winter winds and the rough seasons they have had of late.
Be happy there are winds at all,
Keelan told him. Keelan reached the top of the stairs as Orlo pointed toward a line of doors. They went to the door with a blackened 3 marked on it. Keelan walked in after his new acquaintance opened the door. It was a simple room with a bed and a chair next to a very small desk. A candle sat unlit. Orlo went back into the hallway and found another candle and lit the wick. He then shut the door and sat down at the table. Keelan removed his boots before lying down. His swords remained on him due to his strange visitor, who so needed his help.
I take it you and your brother are not from here?
No, we come from the mountains to the east.
So you find yourselves making these lands home for what reason?
We are adventurers, I guess you might say. The home life is not our thing, and we will do whatever we can to remain free.
So you have no actual jobs or meaningful life beyond wandering aimlessly?
Orlo leaned back in the chair with his hands behind his back and closed his eyes.
We have purpose, but like you, we choose to not tell all our secrets at once.
Keelan could respect that.
Just know, dear man, I have little patience for lies. And you better have a way to take me south after we meet up with your brother. Is this place you need to go too far?
Not too far, especially if you have a horse we can both ride.
Keelan closed his eyes for sleep as the man laid his head on the table and began to snore. He wondered what strange shenanigans he had agreed to.
2. Treasure Hunters. Morning came, and Keelan woke up to Orlo shaking him. In a quick motion, he drew his blade.
Time to awaken, not fight.
Orlo stuttered. He released his grip on the man's shirt and lowered his sword. Keelan sat up and began to prepare to leave the room. He said nothing to his new companion as he slid on his boots. Orlo followed him downstairs but trailed behind, still slightly afraid considering the mishap a few moments ago. The inn was quiet, and other than crackling embers that remained in the fire, they were met with silence. Keelan placed the key on the bar and walked outside. His horse awaited him. Orlo watched as he mounted.
So I take it there is no horse for me?
Keelan glared at him.
Okay, I was only kidding. Hold on.
Orlo disappeared around the corner and came back with a pale black steed.
I may have little money, but I do at least have a horse.
He mounted and they rode out of the village. Keelan looked down at his map and noticed the man led him in the same direction he was already heading, until just past dawn. They then turned down a less-than-traveled road leading north. Leaving further from what seemed partly civilized, Keelan looked up into old trees strewn with vines and strange flowers of red and purple that he had never seen before. The road curved up a large hill and then back down. They descended into a valley that was mostly a large lake overgrown with trees. The water was just visible, catching the midday sun now arcing across the sky.
"Where is it we go?"
Keelan asked. "The swamp home."
"A swamp? I am from the north, but I know this word. It is too cold for a swamp. What place do we really go to?"
Orlo shook his head, yes.
"The swamp home, as I said it is. I understand your doubts, but soon you will understand."
In all his careful maneuvers, and even a few misgivings in his travels, he had learned to trust few in the lands, save himself. Of the most nefarious of issues was the betrayal of the dwarven hunter ship when he was still in the glacial seas. He was told of a young woman, a stranger to an island, who was of profound beauty. The entire ruse was a trap, and one that Tulisairo had noticed first, having found more than one body in the bay, when Keelan searched the remains of a village. When the dwarves attacked, as had become normal for Keelan's expectation of them, he killed them. Then there were the elf traders from the south. He thought his own kin could prove true in assistance, but they simply attempted to swindle his money from him. Their extortion failed, and he collected a good deal of his coin from their coin purses. He headed south now out of desperation more than pure belief in this man of knowledge, but at this point he had no compass to direct his path. Ori was his sister, the last of his family he believed alive. He had heard nothing of his mother or father, but only bloodshed between the races of magic. This man led him to something, and he was not entirely sure it was a good thing. In the end, it would likely be his blades that sorted the lies from the truth. That was how it always ended anyway. The road had turned to water. Not that it was raining or a sudden stream had overgrown its banks. The road literally led into the lake. It continued on ahead with a series of bridges and stone paths that were just visible beneath the surface.
"This way," Orlo said, leading them into the water.
"This swamp house," Keelan began. "What sort of place is it?"
"Well, you should be fine. The last few I brought were not the greatest in the way of heart and sword, but I sense you will do well."
Keelan stopped, pulling his one blade from his scabbard. Orlo turned to him.
"I wouldn't do that here."
"You are unarmed, and I will not be told what to do."
Orlo turned. He held his hands up as if surrendering. His eyes shifted upward and around.
"Yes, but they are."
Keelan looked around him. At the edge of the trees and in the boughs above, men looked down on them. They looked as if they were part of the trees, dark and covered in leaves. Most held bows, but some had spears. He drew his second blade, and his horse became unsteady.
"Whoa,"
he said to her. A whisper came from above.
"Drop your blades and feel not the wrath of Gudru."
Keelan laughed.
"Drop yours, and you will not feel my own wrath, Shadow Speaker."
He felt his head suddenly become heavy. In his arm was a barbed point. He looked up. The figures appeared to be closer. He felt another prick in his back, and then another barbed point struck his other arm. The strange petals of the flowers he had noticed before were wrapped along the shaft of the small device. He was dizzy, and blackness overtook him. Keelan felt himself lying down. There was commotion nearby, but he could not see yet. His body ached. He began to be able to move his hands and feet, and he sat up. There was faint light across the room. He felt for his swords, but found neither upon him. He was in simple garbs now, and didn't even have his boots. Mud surrounded him and made a half-circle where he noticed some type of metal-formed bars. He walked up to them and took hold. He gave a firm pull, but they did not budge. He heard the commotion again. He looked through his bars and saw other bars. About that time, the door opened and men with torches entered.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?